Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Turkmenistan has recently abolished the remaining package of utility services which it has been providing to its citizens for free since the independence. They consist of gas, electricity, water, and salt. The decision comes amid increasing economic challenges and limited options for way out. On today's Majlis, we are here to discuss how does these challenges looks like on the ground, what the government's options are, and what those options might mean for the political future of the current leadership. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Sam Bhotia, Economic Intelligence Unit's Central Asia Specialist, Max Hiss, Principal Analyst for Eurasia at AKE International, Farouk Yusupi, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, Bruce Spanier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Ovozi. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Happy to be here.
Very nice to have you. So let's get into this. Farouk, it seems lately everyone is worried about Turkmenistan's economic challenges. Just how bad is this?
Yeah, it seemed the economy was out of control of the Turkmen government for some time now. And it's, I think they put up with the idea that it has gone out of control, and they're probably looking where it will come, but they're trying to stay afloat by imposing different kind of measures and canceling and abolishing the free gas and free benefits. I mean, they were not completely free in the first place since last year, because last year they kept a limited amount, like they had quotas for electricity, gas, or water.
Which they provided.
And now they're going to abolish them altogether. And there is a reaction coming. In the recent days, we've had, just today, we published a video of some 600 or 700 people in front of a bread store. And people in that crowd told us that they had to wait for 8 hours from 8 o'clock in the morning until 4 p.m. in the evening to get three loaves of bread. And just now, as I was preparing for this talk with you, I received another report, which I will have to verify and we didn't publish it, that in Lebap, people went to houses of elderly people, you know, those participants of the People's Council, Halk Maslahate, and demanded explanation why they agreed to abolishment of these benefits. That this was some benefit that which was a little bit help for people. So what those elderly, Yashuli, or respected elderly people told that they couldn't do anything. It was the decision of dear Arkadag, and they should go to the regional administration. And they did, according to this report. They did, and yesterday they had a special meeting calling the leaders of the communities and explaining them that in the current economic realities, they cannot provide free benefits anymore. And people are very angry. And the response from people were, if our esteemed Arkadag cannot handle this, then he should go. This is what people are saying. And this report that we published today from that crowd in front of the bread store from Dashol, they were also angry, and they chased away the policemen and security services that were watching the crowd. And they were also telling the policemen, our Arkadag is no longer with his people. He should go. That's what our reporters are telling us.
Just to follow up on that, the information that you are getting from Turkmenistan, how does the regions compare in terms of the effect of this situation? Like, is there any difference between, let's say, Lebap to Dashoghuz, Dashoghuz to Balkan, or Balkan to Ahal, for example?
Yes, there is a little bit difference, yes. The worst situation is in Dashoghuz, in Lebap. Those two regions probably are at the same level of things getting worse day by day. In Ahal is better because it's considered the capital region, so to speak. Balkan is not doing that bad as those two regions, like Lebap and Ahal. But Interestingly, yesterday we reported about elderly people, the pensioners, who were standing in front of the ATM machines to cash their pensions. You know that the pensions are now paid through those so-called plastic cards, banking cards, and we cannot use those banking cards in Turkmenistan because there is no infrastructure. So they were trying to cash, but the queue was so big, it was, according to our correspondent, some 200 people. And when the first couple dozen people got their money, the ATM ran out of cash. And the elderly people in front of the bank, they started brawling. Now, there was a brawl among them, and the bank workers had to call police to rein in the situation. So police came, and they had to watch that they don't fight.
Wow. Bruce, we have been talking about this challenging economic situation in Turkmenistan once in a while, and now it seems, as Farooq's comments, that there are some new element in this situation, like police are seen being chased in this. So how do you see things are developing?
I mean, you have to look at this as a real serious deterioration, and not so much the living situation, which has been deteriorating for a long time, but in people's respect or fear for the authorities. I mean, the fact that people are, as Farooq mentioned, they're willing to say out loud that they think Arkadaug should go. They're willing to confront the police and chase them away. I mean, these are things were unheard of. You know, for all the time Turkmenistan has been independent, you just didn't do this kind of stuff. That we've reached this level shows that, you know, we're the pot is boiling, and I suppose potentially the lid could blow off any time. But this certainly marks a new stage in Turkmenistan, where you know, people seem to have are giving up hope on the government providing them with much of anything. You know, and let's face it, you know, it's as we were talking before the podcast, of course, this is autumn. If they're having problems with food and money right now, you know, where are we going to be in December or January? You know, so if I was the Turkmen government, if I was Berdimuhamedov, and we don't know how much of this he ever hears, but he should be really worried at this point because, like I said, the Turkmen people, we've wondered where the limits of their patience were going to be, and we're getting pretty close. And so far, they're still getting their quotas of free gas, electricity, and water, but that ends as of December 31st this year, and then they're going to have to start paying for this after that. And Farooq also mentioned yesterday, I think, that prices for basic goods are about to rise too, even from in state stores on top of it. So
when
if you're
that
a
when that
if
when that's to happen,
Farooq would know.
Farooq?
According to a government official in Balkan region who spoke with our correspondent, starting next year, the prices for fuel is going up 100%. That's what the expectation is according to this government official. Of course, he was talking on the condition of anonymity. And
Are we talking only about the price of fuel?
no, and he said that the prices for fuel will go up, and that will drag with itself the prices for basic staples like flour, cotton oil, cottonseed oil, and sugar. He said that a kilo of flour is given to one person, family member, in 1 month, and that's one manat. That's like subsidized price. It's going to go up to 2 manats, and cottonseed flour is 4 manats per liter, the subsidized price, and that's going to go up to 8 manats, he said. And you remember the story last year about kindergarten fees going up from 8 manats to 80 manats. Now, again, according to this government official, the prices for kindergartens are going to be between 150 and 200 manats per month, depending on the region. Like the cities will have higher prices and rural areas lower prices, but still, it's going to be at least 150 manats per month.
Farooq, these are, I believe, the price for subsidized products. So, as per your report today, I was looking into your agenda that those things are not available easily, even if you are ready to pay for this, like a 20 hours long wait to get just 3 kilograms of flour in Daşoğlu, the story that you are running today.
Yes. I mean, it's not easily available, but people wait because that's the only price that they can afford. You know, they cannot afford to buy çörek, the Turkmen bread, many people cannot, I should say, free market price for bread, because one churek, this, you know, round loaf of bread, now costs 5-6 manats, which is not affordable for a majority, absolute majority of Turkmenistanis.
5-6 manat is equal to what in terms of dollars through official
rate? I mean, by official rate, it's like almost $2 per one loaf. So, and we were talking about very simple Turkmen churek. It's not like there are loaves of bread that will cost 15 manats per piece, per loaf. So, and those are only for those who can afford it. And there are not many of those who can afford it.
I know we need to bring on Sam and Max in this discussion, obviously. Just before that, one final question, Farooq, to you. So what staples appears to be in short supply these days?
I mean, in Dashovs and Lebap, it's mostly flour, cottonseed oil. You know, Turkmen people prefer cottonseed oil and sugar and rice. Rice was in high demand and in shortage too.
Okay, so maybe Sam, all these are happening just ahead of winter. We need help from you to make sense of what we are really trying to understand here. How does this situation looks like from your lenses as an economist? Give us some economic metrics to understand what's happening.
I think what we're seeing here is the effect of the Turkmenistan government's policies, most specifically its policies to kind of keep manat fixed at 3.5 manats to the dollar, even though it's overvalued by quite a large margin. And the reason why it's overvalued and why Turkmenistan is having this entire problem can be traced back to like 2 or 3 years back when, first of all, oil and gas prices completely slumped. And I think Turkmenistan's total export revenue from hydrocarbons, from gas, fell from about $11 billion in 2014 to about maybe around $7 to $7.6 billion in 2017. So what we're seeing is this the effect of this economic contraction and the government's decision to kind of like hold its exchange rate at that particular level. What holding this exchange rate at this particular level has meant is that the government has been forced to enact particular policies in order to make sure that there is no outflow of foreign exchange. And what these policies are is basically kind of like a curb on imports, just completely like, you know, completely restricting the imports of goods. And because of this restriction of on imports, we're seeing shortages in the Turkmen economy. And it seems like the government is committed to holding on to this peg of 3.5 manats to the dollar for at least for the near term.
It looks like,
So it's probably likely that Turkmen citizens will continue to face shortages over the short term.
If Turkmenistan continue to stick with this policy, what logically would explain why they would do this?
Well, there could be many explanations. One reason could be maybe the Turkmen government, maybe it feels that this the necessity to hold to this exchange rate of 3.5 manats to a dollar is some sort of a prestige issue. The other thing is that, for example, if you're trying to take money out of Turkmenistan, now, if you devalue the currency, then the money will be worth much less in terms of US dollars as compared to, let's say, when the exchange rate is at $3.5. So in case, let's say if there was a kleptocratic government that's trying to take money out of a country, this overvalued exchange rate would aid them much more compared to a depreciated exchange rate. So maybe it's that there could be a variety of reasons. But what we're seeing is that because of the government's decision to hold exchange rates at this particular level and because of the type of currency controls needed to enable it to do so, we're seeing a lot of shortages in the Turkmen economy, which is leading to a complete erosion of consumers' purchasing power and in a way, a fall in living standards. For example, what Farooq was talking about when he was saying there were queues outside these government subsidized stores, which is basically a form of rationing of the little that the government is able to import. If I may, I think there could be a slight turn to the positive because what we're seeing this year is that Turkmenistan's export revenues from China have kind of risen somewhat from, if you're looking at the year till August compared to last year, export revenue has increased by about 17%, which should mean that there's more foreign exchange in Turkmenistan's coffers. But then again, this depends on how much foreign exchange or how much export revenue Turkmenistan is actually getting from China and how much is of it is going to pay off Chinese loans, which the Turkmen government took in order to develop the country's gas infrastructure.
Yeah, China aspect of the discussion is, again, another Pandora box that we don't understand really what's going on there. Max, what is your explanation of this situation on why Turkmenistan is here where it is today?
Well, I think that fundamentally the reason why it is where it is today is mismanagement of the economy. Turkmenistan, as we know, has now for the past 2 years only had one customer for its major export, natural gas. It's been very slow in efforts to try to diversify the economy. We've lately seen Berdimuhamedov make a push to try to do so, but this is all much too late. We've seen this in the form of two fertilizer plants to try to convert some of that gas into other export commodities. So far, however, there are still issues with the payments for the first of those two plants that was constructed by a Belarusian state company. The second was then a partnership with a number of Japanese ventures, including Mitsubishi, Kawasaki, some of the major firms there. So there are still some willing to invest in Turkmenistan, but it's all much too late. It's been far too, you know, these few projects are not able to successfully change the whole economy, and what benefits they do have will only be slow in coming. Turkmenistan has also had to take significant debt to pay for them. We're unsure of the full nature of its debt picture because it doesn't release that data. But really, the fundamental mismanagement of the economy is the reason why it is where it is today.
So, yes, the economic situation of the country continues to remain challenging and authorities need to fix it. Let's talk about how much time they got to fix it. What are their options and what are those options might mean to the political future of the current leadership? We will continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. But first, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. I'm joined by Sam Bhatia, Economic Intelligence Unit Central Asia Specialist, Max Hiss, Principal Analyst for Eurasia at AKE International, Farouk Yusupi, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service, Bruce Panier, Editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Block, Kishlok Owazi. I am Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Media Manager here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing growing concerns over Turkmenistan's economic challenges and increasingly limited options for current leadership to overcome this crisis. So, talking about fixes, let's start with you, Bruce. Where do you see the fix is coming from? Where is the answer lies to these questions?
We've gone over this a little bit before, and sad part is the Turkmen government just doesn't seem to want to do this. Now, you could, maybe not so much in the short term, but the midterm, turn this around if you'd be willing to open up the country a lot more to foreign investment, and that would mean letting in actual foreigners to be on your soil. They need to give onshore contracts to some of these people. A lot of people would be interested in investing in Turkmenistan and developing gas fields and building new petrochemical plants if they thought that they wouldn't, that all their money wouldn't just get lost somewhere in the Turkmen bureaucracy. But Turkmenistan has just, you know, again and again shown that they're not willing to take that kind of step. They don't want that kind of outside influence in their country. We know that they don't let hardly almost anybody into the country anyway, and they don't seem to want any outside scrutiny of their finances. They just don't seem willing to do it. You know, they got so many dirty secrets in the country, which aren't really that secret anymore. And they seem to be afraid that by giving foreigners more access to the countries, that all this would be exposed, even though, as we know, and certainly Farouk and his service knows it, it's not a secret anymore. The economy's in free fall. Officials are corrupt. They spend money on ridiculous things all the time. They're going to host international weightlifting competition very soon. You know, and where are they going to get money for that? this is, again, with the bad policy decisions we've already heard Sam and Max talk about.
These onshore contracts, Bruce, they don't like it. Privatization, they don't like that either. They also don't like foreigners coming into the country. Remember, Turkmenistan is not expected to be part of Dariga Nazarbayeva's proposed Silk Road visa project. So tell me, what else? What else can they do other than this?
On their own, I really don't see much. They just don't have capability. You know, if a miracle happened, the price of oil is going up. Now, we can assume that the price of gas is going up. But, of course, they're locked into long-term contracts with China. So it's probably not going to matter that much. You get a little money off this swap business with Iran. You know, they sell some gas to Azerbaijan, and they want to sell some gas, not very much, to Armenia. It's certainly nothing that's going to correct their economic woes. But, you know, if they could get customers now or get them lined up, the price for gas should start going. It always lags behind oil, but it should start coming up. And if they can sign some new contracts, although I don't know with who and I don't know by what export route they would do it, you know, I mean, that would kind of help. But left on their own, like I said, they're either going to have to give onshore contracts or totally throw in the towel and tell the international community that they're badly in need of aid.
Sam, cutting off utilities could have been one option, which they did. As an economist, how much of a cushion it is expected to provide to an ailing economy as such that Turkmenistan is?
I think it depends on how big the market is and how much they expect to actually get from these paying customers, whether these customers would actually be in a position to make payments for these utilities. But I think the easiest option, and one that has been prescribed by other multilateral agencies such as the IMF, the World Bank, etc., is just simple devaluation and bringing the currency in line with its underlying real rate. And the government seems very unwilling to do so for some reason. But that would be the short of it, the one that would actually bring this external imbalance that the economy is currently facing, make it much smaller. As to other fixes, more painful fixes, I mean, there are long-term things that the economy can do. The economy could diversify away from its gas exports, government. The most important thing is, I guess, it could improve its business environment, make it more easier for foreign companies to operate, and more certain for foreign companies could to operate, as Bruce mentioned. And the other thing that the economy is also trying to do right now is trying to pursue this policy of import substituting industrialization, as Max did mention. But one of the problems with how the government is going about everything at the moment is, in a way, import substituting industrialization becomes a bit difficult when you completely cut off all imports, which means that your access to a lot of inputs and technology is restricted. So because of this, there are considerable challenges. And these are things that the economy could only achieve over a medium or a longer term. In the short term, the easiest fix is, of course, devaluation, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
The main thing is obviously China and export revenue from China. I think gas demand from China is set to increase over for a considerable period of time. And because of this, obviously, this provides considerable opportunity for Turkmenistan. And the other thing is, we also see oil prices and gas prices, prices of hydrocarbons in general, remaining at the current level or increasing over, let's say, the five-year horizon. So this should also mean more revenue, but it also depends on how the gas contracts are structured with China. As for other things, there is a small amount of revenue that the country could get from selling electricity to countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan. Pakistan, for example, faces significant energy shortages. And I think the government has made some progress in this. I mean, it has invested in infrastructure in trying to create distribution lines to different parts of Afghanistan. It's involved in particular electricity projects, which aim to export electricity to Afghanistan and Pakistan. The other project, the highly touted project, is the TAPI pipeline, the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India pipeline. But I don't think we can see much progress there. And the other thing that the recent, relatively recent development that has happened is the Caspian Sea Agreement that was signed in August, which should theoretically open up the possibility for the construction of a trans-Caspian pipeline, which means that Turkmenistan could export its some of its gas to Azerbaijan. And since Azerbaijan will be exporting a lot of its domestic production to European countries once the Southern Gas Corridor is complete, so there are opportunities, but it's difficult to see whether these opportunities will be helpful in the short run. I guess the easiest thing for the government to do right now would be to devalue its currency, but for some reason it seems completely unwilling to do so.
If that happens, like TAPI and Trans-Caspian Pipeline or the electricity supplies that you mentioned to Afghanistan, it might help Turkmenistan in the long run, but what to do in the short term? I mean, it appears to be that Turkmenistan needs some quick fix given the situation described by Farooq and Bruce. So, Farooq, tell me, how much time President Berdimuhamedov got to show some progress in this?
I can tell you one thing, that what he should not do in order to start fixing things. I mean, he should stop playing toys. I mean, he should stop pretending like he's a singer or he's a sportsman, and he should stop wasting money on different kind of sports events or international events that Turkmen people don't have any interest in. And he should really start managing the country. He should really start governing the country and managing the economy and start thinking of ways of how to bring out the country from this deep, deep crisis. And it looks like he, from his behavior, it looks like he doesn't care. And from the faces of his ministers, you can see that they are very, very much concerned. Whenever you look on the on TV, like for example, the other day he had a Security Council meeting in the mountains, and from the looks, he was giving like very important advice, and they were all writing. But from the faces of those ministers, you could really tell that they are really concerned that things are not going well. And in the during this Halk Maslahat, the People's Council, when he was talking about like Turkmen people now became very rich and they can afford paying for gas, and that's why we're going to abolish, you should have looked at the faces of those elderly people. They were very sad. I think they were all crying inside them. There is no time. There is no more time to play games, to play toys for this president. He should really get his act together and start thinking, start governing, start managing the country and the economy and the social sphere, everything. Mm. Everything is in tatters.
Yeah, yeah. So, Bruce, you know, things are not going well, as I believe is the message that everyone on this panel appears to be in agreement with. So, again, coming back to the same topic, so how much time he got to fix this?
Well, I would expect that, I mean, it's already a crisis. When the first bills start coming for electricity, water, and gas at the end of January or February next year, and people already are out of money because the prices for basic foods and things have gone up, if he hasn't come up with some plan to turn it around by then, you know, I mean, we've been debating how long he could possibly last for a while. I'm surprised he's still in. But I would think that coming on toward the end of next winter, that it'll really peak. If he hasn't figured out some way to get them out of that, out of the situation, you know, people are just looking at, you know, increased costs for across the board for everything with no relief in sight. There's, you know, he keeps offering the same platitudes over and over. It's the golden age. We're doing great. You know, I mean, people have been hearing this for years and years and watching as their standard of living went down. So, you know, really by the end of winter, if he can't come up with something to turn this around, as we've heard, people are willing to confront the police and denounce him, you know, and say Arkadag should go. That's not going to get any better as it gets colder and people get hungrier.
The same question to you, Max. Let me put it in a little bit different way. So first, the timeline, how much time he got to fix this, and also how this fix, this progress will or should look like on the ground?
Well, exactly how long he has, I think, is a very difficult question. I mean, that the government has sort of made it this far without more dramatic issues coming to the fore, I think, is already quite remarkable. I certainly agree with Bruce. If it's bad already, as it is now in the autumn, this winter will prove a real challenge. There's a little sign that we'll see increased yield from agricultural fields next year, even with those new fertilizer plants. To touch on some of Sam's points quickly, I certainly agree that the move to reform the currency would be helpful. I have doubts that it would give a significant boost in the short term, in large part because Turkmenistan is just not a competitive producer of many goods. The economy has been a basket case for so long, and I think that's not just an issue with the currency. I think that's a wider issue in the economy. I'm not sure there are immediate steps that can be taken, at least under the current political economy, to really improve the domestic economy. The moves that I would see as most beneficial and most likely to benefit Turkmenistan if the crisis really does accelerate are more initially political. Turkmenistan's neighbors, Iran, which it's often feuded with, there have been a number of rumors in recent months that a new deal to sort of swap gas or have a barter trade in gas would be reached. None of these have come to fruition. We haven't seen the Turkmen make any official statements on it. Iranian media has now reported they're formally going to international arbitration over it. But this lack of certainty and clarity on many issues is something that really affects the wider economy, stops people from developing there. Some of the government's other pushes, I mean, make sense. For example, the new port launched on the Caspian Sea this year, but already Turkmenistan wasn't seeing the kind of cargo flows that it wanted over the Caspian. So why go spend another $1 billion+ on building a new giant port when existing ones aren't being used efficiently? So I think what the Turkmen regime would really need is it needs to engage deeper with its international partners. I believe Farouk mentioned there's hope for something coming on the Caspian now that this deal has been agreed. My understanding of it is that it includes clauses about the ecological status of the Caspian Sea that would allow other countries essentially veto power over any trans-Caspian projects. Russia has traditionally been very strongly opposed to such a pipeline. But if it engages with Azerbaijan, with Europe, potentially even with China on how to advance that, that's the only way it's going to get done. The same we see in Afghanistan. You know, TAPI is a project the government is really pushing, but it's not something that the U.S. is advocating for as a major opportunity to develop the Afghan economy, which would certainly be in the U.S. interest as well, given the now 17 years that it's been in conflict there. So I think part of what it really needs to do is it needs to recognize that it's just dug itself into such a deep hole. Even a currency reform, even opening up the economy to some of those onshore contracts, that wouldn't be enough, and it really needs to politically engage. Now, one thing I just wanted to mention very briefly, in line with some comments that you made earlier, were about tourism and the like, and Turkmenistan's sort of ability to seek other forms of regional integration in Central Asia as well. You know, we just saw Berdi Muhammadov skip the CIS Head of States summit. He gave a speech for the new Independence Day, which he moves forward to the end of September 27th, apologies, from October 27th last year. Again, you know, no clear reason as to why he did that was announced. But during that speech, he actually did talk for the first time that I've read, at least, about, you know, looking to develop tourism in the future. That would be a way to get in some much needed foreign reserves. Now, I don't think we should hold him to his words on that. It certainly wasn't something that he then, you know, later mentioned in his speech at the UN last week. During the General Assembly, he did meet with a number of U.S. businessmen, including Bill Koch, a member of a very politically influential family in the United States. So there are signs, maybe, just maybe, starting to do some of these things. But I think that's a very strong if. And, you know, we've seen signs before of Turkmenistan looking to politically engage elsewhere, and then it hasn't done so. But I guess just to summarize, I think it needs to politically engage and look for support, and that there is no sort of economic move Ashgabat can take itself to improve things in the short term.
Okay, final point, Bruce, let's do this. The opening in Uzbekistan, if there is any genuine opening there, can Tashkent play any role in addressing some of these issues in Turkmenistan towards resolution of some sort?
Well, you know, they're still trying to get their own economy moving in the right direction, only by example. You know, I know that Mirziyoyev likes to go to places in Central Asia and say, well, we're willing to invest in these projects and or we'll make this kind of loan available to you. Although even the loans that he's talking about are more, it's kind of like along the Chinese model or something. We'll loan you money, loan money to businesses that plan on doing business with Uzbekistan. So in the end, Uzbekistan gets its money back, plus the people that they loan the money to are buying Uzbek products. So it's that would not help Turkmenistan. Like I said, only by example. There's nothing Uzbekistan can do financially on its own to help out its neighbor. And I think Uzbekistan has enough of its own problems that that's really not a concern for the government in Tashkent.
So this is not really the point we would like to end the discussion, but yeah. So thank you very much, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Owozi. Also, big thanks goes to Sambotia Economic Intelligence Unit, Central Asia Specialist, Max Hess, Principal Analyst for Eurasia at AKE International, Faruk Yusupi, Director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Turkmen Service. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.